And we've got open lines for you tonight. And that magic moment line, of course, is 818-817-0021. You know, I said yesterday I wanted to address tonight this economic situation that we are all in. And I want to talk with you about it for just a few seconds before we go to calls. I get calls every day from friends and especially my three children who have never gone through this before. And I've seen some hills and valleys. It's never been this bad before in my lifetime. But my parents have gone through the worst, too. And they say, Dad, what's going to happen? How bad is it going to get? This is a storm-tossed sea that you're in, and I'm in. And we will eventually get out of it. Because this is a system that eventually will find itself. It happens all the time. It works if it's left alone to work. Unfortunately, what's happening right now is there's just too much greed and corruption involved. There's too much meddling around. And the pumping of stimulus money, as we predicted months ago with Gerald Celente and Catherine Austin Fitz and Mish Shedlock and everybody else who's been to this program, Andre Aguilachon, Andy Goss, it's not going to work. You just can't continue to throw money this way. And it turns out to be trillions and trillions of dollars when they originally talked about this original bailout, which was $700 billion, if you remember. And then they spent $350 billion into the Bush administration, and then off the rest went. And then the new stimulus package and everything else. It's not going to work. What they should have done is they should have done something to stimulate the economy. They should have done away with the IRS, given you your money so you could spend it the way you want. And rather than spend all this money in stimulus cash, they should have given you a voucher for a certain amount of money, $5,000, $10,000, $50,000. I don't care what it is because they just print it anyway. And this voucher would have entitled you to spend it on goods in this country. And you had to do that. It wasn't cash. It wasn't like a check. You couldn't put it in your checkbook. You had to spend it. And, you know, you go off and get your flat screen television or your brand new car or your boat or your clothes or whatever you needed to do. But that would have stimulated the economy, not this waste of money that they keep throwing at banks. And look at that. Look what they've done with Citicorp. They keep bailing them out. They bailed them out three times already, and still their stock continues to go down and down and down. And it's happening all over the place. But even though you're going to go through this storm-tossed sea, and you're going to go through a big storm, believe me, and I will too, eventually it's going to fix itself, and it's going to pull out of itself. There will be victims along the way. There will be companies that die. But there will be new industries that pop up, and eventually, and I can't tell you when, this country is going to be back on top again economically, as bad as it feels and as bad as it seems. And believe me, I'm not going to sugarcoat this. It is bad. But I will tell you this. I mean, I know, if I know anything, that eventually we will pull out of it and we'll be better for it as people. We really will. Back in a moment with open line calls on Coast to Coast AM. Hold on to your hats. Here we go. Let's go to Dinah on the Magic Moment line. Hey, Dinah.
Hi.
Dinah.
How are you doing, George?
Somebody in the kitchen with you? Dinah?
How are you doing, George?
Can you hear me, Dinah?
I'm here.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me? I can hear you.
You're breaking up a little bit. Call back if you can. We'll keep that line open for you. Plainville, Massachusetts, east of the Rockies. Hello, Josh. You're up with us.
Hey, George. How you doing?
Good.
All right. So, basically, I have a story for everybody from coast to coast. Back when I was in college up at UMass Amherst, I was out in the woods one night. It was relatively late. I like the record to clearly show I had done no drugs that night. I had consumed no alcohol that night.
Let the record show.
All right. So, I was just kind of up hanging out, and I turn around, and in the bushes, I see a little person, about a foot and a half tall, wearing a red shirt. They had kind of a Bill Mom hairstyle, kind of a bun. And I turn around and I'm like, what is this thing? And I walk towards it, and it fades right before my eyes. It goes from opaque, transparent, can't see it anymore.
Perfectly sized, proportioned little person.
Maybe my memory's kind of vague. I remember kind of the top half of the body.
And what else happened?
That's pretty much just it. Just sort of a random story I thought people coast to coast would enjoy.
That's weird. Kind of like, almost like a leprechaun, but not quite. Let's go to Roberto in Winnipeg, Canada. Hello there, Roberto.
How you doing, George?
Okay, what's going on?
Okay, I just wanted to call because I'm a little bit concerned. I've been thinking about this for quite a bit and talking to some friends here. On February 19th, President Obama visited Canada, and just the day before, Russia had sent two bombers to very close to the Canadian border. And I know this kind of flew out of the news. It kind of came in quickly and flew out of the news really quick.
Yes.
Do you recall that?
I do, and the Russians denied they were doing anything like that.
But, exactly. So, first of all, I guess I just want to kind of, you know, evoke some thought about this situation, because if you think about it, I mean, why would they send two bombers? And, you know, the Canadian government basically stated, you know, it's kind of too coincidental. So they didn't like that. Anyway, so they basically they told the air, you know, they sent two jets out and they sent these bombers out.
These nations keep playing around with each other. You know,
exactly.
You know, they're like, I'll push you, you push me.
And that's just it. But one of the things that I don't know if anybody else notices, but Russia's been pretty cocky lately, you know, in terms of what they're doing. I mean, you know, what if they had done this in the U.S.? You know, I don't know what sort of you know, what sort of action would have been taken. I don't know if it would have been more aggressive or not. But, you know, Canadian government's pretty, I don't know.
Well, you know, here's the problem with it, Roberto. Desperate people do desperate things.
Yeah.
And I think the Russians are desperate right now.
Yeah.
And that makes them a loose cannon.
Yeah. And you know, further to this, and I just want to add this, and you know, by no means, you know, I mean, this is kind of a little bit difficult for me to talk about, but, you know, this goes back to the Mabus prophecies that Nostradamus had, Quatrain 62.
You mean as the third Antichrist?
Yeah, and I kind of want to clear something up, because I don't really agree with what some of the people are saying, because the whole thing about Mabus is that Mabus is not really, in my opinion, Mabus is not the third Antichrist. In fact, from what I've learned, is that Mabus is actually someone who will be someone that will start the Third World War. It's not necessarily that, you know, it's not that his actions will, but something, an event, you know, some event will start this. And if I'll just remind your listeners, Quatrain 62 says Mabus will soon die. Then will come a horrible undoing of people and animals at once. One will see vengeance, 100 powers, thirst, famine, when the comet will pass. Now, if we take a look at that, in no way does it state Mabus is the third Antichrist.
No. And I think even John Hoag says that we really don't know who the third Antichrist
exactly.
is. He gives all these possibilities. But are you also making reference, though, to this comet that has just gone by, Luna?
Absolutely. Yeah, I am, because it's going to be passing. Like, we haven't really visibly been able to see it, but I believe it'll go around the sun.
No, it was a couple days ago. You could have seen it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. You missed it.
I guess I did. Okay, so now if we go to Quatrain 77, and it talks about the Antichrist, it says the Antichrist very soon annihilates the three. 27 years his war will last.
So you think we're in the middle of all this now, don't you?
No, I don't think so. I think this is all kind of setting up. I mean, if you look at, you know, and I know there's a lot of talk about the economy and the state of the world and everything like that, and one of the things that, you know, kind of just, it just feels like something's setting up for all these things to kind of come about. Now, if you take, for example, you know, the prophecies of Nostradamus, it is clear that they said, you know, if he's looking into further time into the future, things get a little bit hazy. If he's looking at different lands or whatever that are further from where he was in Europe, you know, things got a little bit hazy. So, you know, if we look at that and, you know, we look at Mabus, and, you know, I kind of came to this conclusion.
All right, cut right to it. What's the conclusion?
The conclusion is that if you take the name Barack Hussein Obama, you can actually get Mabus out of those letters.
How do you do that?
Well, Obama.
M-A-B-U-S.
Right. Okay. Oh, so you go Obama, right, M-A-B, and then Hussein is H-U-S-S. And H's are silent. Sometimes you don't count them or whatever. So, I mean, it's a little bit play on letters and what have you. But, I mean, if you look at all the other types of people that they've tried to tie into this, you know, this comes pretty close.
All right, so you're not saying he's the Antichrist, but that his name was involved in something. Well, hey, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, he's in a very difficult situation right now. I mean, he inherited a mess economically, which I think he should have just waited before he did anything, and his advisors should have advised him on that. They all jumped a little too fast, I'm afraid, and we should have come up with a more aggressive program to help people directly, some of the things that I just mentioned. But we'll see. We'll see if you're right. Let's go back to the magic moment line. Dinah, we're going to try it again with you, okay?
Hi, George.
Hello.
Can you hear me now?
Yep, I can.
I had an epiphany happen to me in 1983. I think it's from what happened that evening made me believe in who I am today.
All right, what was that?
My husband and I had gone to sleep. We had a newborn. He was on my side of the bed sleeping by me in the bassinet. We both woke up, sat up like on our shoulders, like on your elbows, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And at the foot of the bed on my side was this, like, white, transparent thing with huge eyes. We could not talk, George. We could not move. It was crazy. You know what I'm saying?
You're saying frozen. You and your husband, you both saw this thing. Okay.
At the same time, this thing moved to the side of me right by the bassinet. It looked at me. It looked at my son. It would look at me, it would tilt its head, and then it would just keep watching my son. It moved back by the edge of the room, and for a good hour, this thing, we were frozen, and it just stared at us.
At any point, did you feel threatened?
Yeah, I was scared to death.
Well, yeah, I would be scared too. But
I didn't feel like, it's like I told my pastor, I had a talk to him, I have not ever discussed this, now I'm doing it on the radio, but with only a few people. And I said I was scared, but I never feared for my life, my husband, nor my sons. It was like a calming, but I was scared to death.
This creature, did it look more like some kind of a apparition, ghost, or more like a extraterrestrial, like one of these alien
graves? It looked
graves.
Like an ET.
Okay.
Yes, it looked like one of those with the eyes, but I am here to tell you that the eyes were so expressional. It looked back and forth at Daniel.
That's amazing. Did it communicate with you at all?
No.
All right, so when it was all said and done,
like all the talking,
how did it leave?
Disappeared.
Just poof, it's gone.
Gone.
And you and your husband were able to move then?
Yes.
You looked at each other, and what did you say?
Oh, my God. I started crying.
Did the baby wake up?
No. Daniel never woke up.
All right.
Like I said, I was scared to death, but it was like a calming effect. It's like I never was in fear, you know, like I was going to, something was going to happen. And like I said, this thing's eyes were so emotional or going back and forth. You know what I'm saying? But
yeah.
They were huge eyes, and they're like, I want to say it looked like a grasshopper's eyes or something like that, praying mantis eyes. You know how they're big like
sure.
that?
How old is the baby now?
Daniel's 26.
Okay. Ask.
And I think about this every single day of my life.
Ask your child, who's not a child anymore. Ask,
I never told him this.
Ask him if he has any memory of an ET visitation. I'm very curious to see if they planted some kind of thoughts in his head.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I've been listening to you for 2 years now, 7 days a week.
Good for you.
7 days.
Well, I'm not on
and
seven.
And I've often wondered that in the back of my head, but I've never asked Daniel this.
Yeah, do that. And I'd be very curious to see what he says. Let me know.
I sure will, George, and thank you for allowing me to share this with you.
All right, Dinah, thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, next up, let's go to Charlotte, North Carolina, first-time caller. Hi, Bill.
Hey, Mr. Norrie.
What's up?
I am a security guard, been one for a long time on third shift, and there's no telling how many nights I've sat here in my car by the glow of my radio and had the time just fly by listening to you. I appreciate it.
It's flying tonight. I have no idea where this time is going. It is just zooming.
It all goes the same speed, but
it
anyway.
It feels fast tonight.
It does. The lady in the first segment who talked about seeing the flock of geese.
Yes.
All right. No sooner had that come out of her mouth than I'm sitting here in the parking lot tonight. Then I hear birds coming from the distance, and they flew right over the top of my car. They were little birds. They weren't geese. They were like little starlings, but I could see them, and they flew right over the top of my car. There must have been 100 of them, and flew off into the distance on the other side.
Right on cue.
Right on cue. I mean, she hung up the phone, and the birds flew over the top of my car.
What are these birds feeling, Bill? What do you think?
I have no idea, but this freaked me out.
Something's going on.
Birds. I have a thing with I have a thing with birds. Birds like me. Hummingbirds will fly right up to me and hover right in front of my face.
I love hummingbirds. Those things are so cool, aren't they? They look like little helicopters.
They're really cool. Yeah.
Dragonflies too.
Well, that's where Sigorsky got the idea, I believe.
Yeah, that's a good point.
For the helicopter.
They just watched them. That's a good point. So, well, you're a security guard. What do you watch? Can you tell us?
Oh, well, yeah, I watch warehouses and I watch shopping centers.
Ever get scared?
Sure. I was watching a garage one night, and off in the distance I heard a screeching sound, like a really high-pitched screeching sound, and I couldn't figure out what it was. And so I drove over to where the sound was coming out of the woods, and the biggest bat I've ever seen in my life, and it was white, flew out of those woods, and I mean, it was 50 feet over my head.
Was it like a foot tall?
I didn't stick around long enough to actually get a really good description.
You sure it was a bat? Maybe it was an owl.
It was a bat.
Man, how would you like that to land on you?
I wouldn't actually like that to land on me at all.
Think of this picture. Think of this picture before you go back to work here, Bill. You walk into a cave. Uh-huh. Your flashlight is not working right, but you finally smack it and get it working, and you see thousands of bats, and they all come at you.
I've changed my pants.
That is quite a thought. I'll be back in a moment. Open lines continue right here on Coast to Coast AM. Don't touch that dial. And, of course, with you, we've got open lines for you right here on Coast to Coast AM. On our next program, of course, we've got Ian Punnett Saturday and Sunday before we come right back with another series of just great shows for you leading up to Friday the 13th. Open lines are already going through halfway of March. Now, don't forget, Saturday night before you go to bed, turns into Sunday at 2 a.m., turn your clocks up and your watches up 1 hour. The old saying, if you ever are confused about it, just think of this little rhyme, spring ahead, fall back. That's all you have to remember, which means every spring you turn the clock up an hour, every fall you turn it back an hour. This time we do it this Sunday at 2 a.m., so when you go to bed Saturday night, just do it. Run around your house and change them. And of course, with your car now, you got to get the manual out to figure out how to do it. We'll be back. Okay, quite a week, huh? Huntington Beach, California, we go, west of the Rockies. Cam, hi.
Hello, George. How are you?
Okay.
Yes, I've been listening for a long time. I really love your shows, and I just want to share a little story with your audience.
Take it away.
Yes, I've been involved in ritual magic for 35 years, and I work with a book called A Mystic Grimoire by Malik. And so I did a ritual for 2 weeks. This was 10 years ago, and then I got on the set of Forrest Gump. I was chosen to be a stand-in.
Really?
Yes.
All right, you got to tell me about that later, after we're done with this part of the call.
Okay. I got to meet Tom Hanks. I brought my father along. He said he was my manager so he could get on the set. And so we were at East Los Angeles City College where they filmed the scene. and also Wilshire Ebell Theater. And so that that was the main part of the story. I used magic to get there, and the problem I had was with panic attacks. And I had a lot of anxiety on the set.
Why? What happened to you?
My mother died at an early age, so that was kind of traumatic. And that she died when she was 50, you know.
Well, all right. When you were on the set and these panic attacks set in, what were you thinking about at that moment?
I was thinking about Xanax, the pill.
About taking it, right?
Yes.
I don't know if you should be taking that stuff, but that's...
I'm off of it now. I was on it for 20 years.
Oh, my God. Okay, now, explain what a panic attack is to someone who has never had it before.
Okay, it kind of sneaks up on you. It's kind of seething beneath the surface, and it feels like you want to climb the wall from the fear. And so I had a Baptist pastor. He said to jump on a trampoline. He told me that I had nervous tension on my nervous system.
Huh.
He said, jump on a trampoline. So sure enough, I did that for a couple weeks, and he said he was praying for me, and then the panic attack subsided.
Is your heart racy when it's happening?
Yes, it is.
You think you're having a heart attack, don't you?
It's just like a fear that you can't escape. You feel like you can't escape it.
You have trouble breathing?
Yes. But that's gone now for the most part.
It's difficult to sleep with it, too, isn't it? You can't sleep with it.
The Xanax puts you to sleep.
So that's what it does. And then you wake up and it's gone, right?
Right. But the main thing I wanted to share with your audience is that not all magic is evil, and actually it's empowering for you. And I wish that people would study things like the Mystic Grimoire and some of the books that you see on Amazon or other sites and bookstores. And it's not all evil. It's empowering.
No. It is, but there is an evil side if people practice that. So what made you decide you wanted to get on the set of Forrest Gump, and so you used magic to do that?
Okay, first I tried to get on the set of Baywatch, and I'm not really...
That, I don't blame you.
Because all the hot girls, you know. And I thought, boy, I'm kind of a thin guy. I don't think I fit on that set, so I didn't make it. The second try, they came to the college, Orange Coast College here in Costa Mesa, California. And they photographed a bunch of us table tennis players. And they called me back and said, would you like to be an extra? And sure enough, I said, sure.
So you're in the movie, and you're playing table tennis in that scene?
I'm Tom Hanks' stand-in, and they called me back a second
time. You're kidding. You're the guys that's smacking that ball back and forth?
There were actually several stand-ins. I was one of the stand-ins.
Are you that good?
I'm just a tournament club player.
That's pretty good, though.
But the main thing is, I'm sorry, you can use magic to improve yourself as well as hard work. It's important to work hard, but in these hard times that we have, you can empower yourself. You can do all kinds of things, you know. Pray, use magic, do whatever you can, and don't get discouraged, you know.
It's funny. You're interested in telling us about magic, which is great, but I want to know more about your table tennis.
Okay.
And what did you think of Tom Hanks?
He's very animated. He was on the set, and he kind of appeared out of nowhere. It was about 8 o'clock at night, and he was looking at Robert Zemeckis, the director. He kind of made his finger go back and forth cross-eyed with his eyes, like he's watching the ping-pong ball too much, you know, and he's joking around a lot. And
he had a great accent, too, when he was, I love you, Johnny. Remember that?
He learned that from Michael Humphreys, a Southern boy, I think.
Did they pay you for this, or did you do this for free?
The extra job only pays $70 a day, and then the stand-in pays a few hundred.
But you had fun.
It was fun, and my father got to meet him, too, so he was excited, you know. And
that's cool. That's good.
Really,
and keep up the magic, too.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Kim. Next up, let's go to Danielle in San Jose, California. Hello.
Hey, George.
Hi.
Long-time listener.
Now, your name can't be Danielle.
No, it's Daniel.
Nice job, whoever typed that.
Oh, yeah.
There is no E at the end of Daniel.
I've been called worse.
Yeah, we're going to have to buy a dictionary for our stuff.
I had a question for you about your economic dissertation and also your questions regarding how long this did last.
Yeah.
My question First of all, I believe everything begins with AIG, and it's going to end with AIG.
And it's weird that they continue to bail out that insurance company. There's something going on there.
Well, I don't think it's weird when you understand what they did 10 years ago.
What was that?
Well, they took the word insurance, and they called it a credit default swap.
Ah.
And they started writing insurance policies against the failure of these high-yield securities that Wall Street has been selling all over the world.
To kind of prop them up, back them up, huh?
That's correct. And if they didn't use the word insurance, because they were at that time a AAA-rated company, if they called it a credit default swap, they did not have to have
the capital to back it up.
That's correct.
Ah.
So my question is, and I really believe the first $350 billion you were talking about tonight that seemed to have disappeared, I believe that's gone to other banks around the world to keep them up. And I don't think America wants to know what we've done with the total $700 billion, where that's going to go. But I want to know how much insurance AIG has written in the last 10 years. And I think the U.S. government knows it, and I think it's in the trillions of dollars. And if we realize what's actually been done, the economy, the monetary system will collapse.
Down the tubes it goes.
Yeah,
because I've always thought, Daniel, that there's a reason why they are secret, and there's a reason why they keep this company, more than any of them, way afloat. I mean, you're going to bail out General Motors, bail out Ford. Go ahead, bail them out, because people are working for these companies. No, they're not doing it like that. AIG, they're pumping, what, $160 billion now into that company? Something like that?
And it just had the largest quarterly loss in the history of the United States. That $60 billion was their loss.
And that was just for the quarter. What about next quarter and the quarter after that?
You go. So now you're starting to understand that they've written insurance policies against our failing mortgage industry.
By the way,
it's trillions of dollars, and this is not going to end.
By the way, spell your first name for my illustrious producer.
Daniel.
One L, right?
That's correct.
Thank you, Daniel.
Not a problem.
All right, bye.
Okay.
All right, take care. Next up, sorry, producer, whoever you are back there, I will not use the name of Tom. Nope. Vancouver, Canada, we go. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Hey.
Hi, it's Mary. I met you at Vancouver when you were
here. Yes, you did.
And I'd like to warn all your American listeners that they better take good care of you, because we'd love to have you up here.
You folks up there were just gracious. It was fun, and I had the time of my life.
Well, it was well-deserved. Anyway, what I'd like to tell you about...
Okay.
I was smack in the middle of a dream, and in this dream I was interrupted. I was basically awakened spiritually. Okay. Now, it's not my first spiritual awakening, but I do slumber. And yeah, that slumbering does worry me. You know what they say, a little slumber here and a little slumber there.
Yeah.
Now, well, anyway, my spirit's on this, it's set on this mountainside. And I felt the change completely, yet the change wasn't a disturbance. I pondered on it, but if you'd asked me how to get where I was going, I couldn't have given you instructions, even though I knew exactly why I was going, where I was going, and how to get there.
In a dream?
In call it what you want.
All right.
Okay? Now, as I was going, I was traveling through this forest. Like, it was beautiful and comfortable, like a good density, right? And the forest floor itself was really gentle to walk on, and the path had become, it became evident as it's like a type of consciousness that directs you literally step by step, right? So I was climbing only so much as to say I was ascending without extreme exhaustion, but I carried an exhaustion, and that was the purpose of my journey. And the tiredness that was weighing on me was from, like, the carnal world, okay?
All right, but what does this all mean?
Well, it'll arrive.
Okay.
Okay, but I knew this stuff. So eventually I felt myself approaching the point of my journey's aim, and I could sense it and completely feel it before I arrived. There was this river. And when I saw this river, it was, if I felt internally like it was like like meeting a treasured, dear, dear old friend. And you get this deep joy, right? And I crossed this bridge over the river.
Okay.
And I come up to the river's edge, and at the bank, I knelt down, and I just touched the tip of my finger in this river. Immediately, I was in immediate rejuvenation, like entirely complete in all the elements, my physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. At that very moment, that part of a second that I touched it, the fluid body of the river, I was completely rejuvenated. I was stunned into like an utter silence and joy at the memory of this complete exhilaration, like of these elements in me, okay? I had forgotten how amazingly wonderful a person could feel. And not being in need to connect further with this river, I still couldn't resist to go in, clothes and all. I just slid into this river.
Well, jump in and finish the story. Tell me, what happened?
Okay. I'm swimming like an otter in this thing. I'm playing in it, right? But this river was not ordinary. This river looked so normal, and yet that once you're in the water, this really weird thing, the colors that flow by you, like streamers, they come. The water comes past your eyes like streamers.
It's like that movie, What Dreams May Come, all those incredible colors.
Yeah, well, I don't know about the movie, but it's incredible colors. And the intensity and brilliance is amazing. And the curve in the water of the waves and stuff, it had music in it. And it wasn't ordinary water because it clung against you like mercury does.
Mary, I'm going to run into a commercial. You got to tell me what happened.
Oh. Years later, read a book about a guy who was talking about he was an automatic writer for somebody who had passed. And he talks about a river, and he explained my river.
But what does it mean?
It's a place. It's a place. I went someplace. I don't know. Well, it means what it means. Like, it means that it means that there's other places, and your spirit can go there, and
maybe you were in heaven.
Oh, it was definitely heavenly.
Could have been. Okay, Mary. Thanks. Let's go to Bob in Gary, Indiana, on Coast to Coast. Hello, Bob.
Hey, George.
Hi, what's going on?
Hey, I had a question for you. I didn't know if you had heard anything about it or not, but yesterday morning at about 2:30 in the morning, I was sitting in my van. I drive for a company at night, and I felt the ground shake. Nothing big, just real minor.
Okay.
And I asked another driver that was in the same parking lot that I was in, and he said he felt something too. It kind of felt like, you know, the motor all of a sudden was running real heavy, and then it passed. Lasted probably 3 or 4 seconds. I didn't know if you'd heard anything about a small earthquake or not.
I can find out really fast. I'll do that right at the top of the hour, but I didn't hear of anything.
Okay.
If you had one, and it's not unusual up your way, it was in the 2 to 3 range, I would guess.
That's what I was guessing. It, you know, it's the ground's real, really, really wet right now. So
that could, as long as it's not the big one, Bob.
Yeah, right.
We don't want that. Okay, thanks, my friend.
Yes, sir.
Let's go to Kathleen in St. Louis. Hey, Kathleen, I hear George Clooney's over there.
Oh yes, we've been hearing a lot about that lately.
Yeah, he's doing a movie in St. Louis. A couple of my friends spotted him at a restaurant out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a great story for you tonight regarding St. Louis University and the true story of The Exorcist.
Okay.
And my own experience with the Ouija board.
All right, go for it.
Okay, I guess first off, for a lot of people that don't know, The Exorcist, the movie, was based on a true story. There are a lot of details changed in order to protect the little boy's identity. It was actually a little boy from the suburbs of Washington, D.C. in the 1940s, and he was brought to St. Louis University for the Jesuits to try to exorcise him.
There was, I believe it was a Lexon Brothers hospital at the time.
Well, actually, they first brought him to the college, the St. Louis University's college church's rectory.
Oh, they did? Okay.
And they first, tried to work on him there. And I'm not sure exactly, I can't remember all the details on why it is, but they eventually transferred him to Alexian Brothers. And that's where they were, you know, successful and, you know, exercising the demon, right, whatever. And but they first tried on SLU's campus, and it was in the College Church Rectory, which has been since knocked down, and absolutely nothing grows on that ground. It looks like somebody had poured bleach on that land. But it was located right next to St. Louis University's main administrative building, and at one time it was actually connected by a land bridge. So it was actually connected on the same floor with a little boy where they worked on him. And when I was going to school there, I had a friend that had a music practice room up on the fourth floor, on the same floor that was connecting to where they, you know, first try to exercise a demon. And we would take a Ouija board up there quite a bit. And we never felt like we contacted anything demonic. And we always thought that we always went about it with a lot of reverence. You know, we never played, you know, by ourselves. Like, you always abided by the rules that you're not supposed to ask about yourself or anything in the future. And we always tried to break off contact if we were getting the feeling from whatever we were contacting that it was, you know, evil.
I'm done with Ouija boards.
Yeah, but we did have one instance, though, up there where something was contacting us. And a lot of times things would spell it, whatever spirits or whatever would be spelling things out on the board. But this spirit was very strong, but it would never be able to spell something. And so somebody got the idea to ask it, you know, well, can you not read or write? And it said, you know, yes. And somebody said, well, okay, well, you know, where are you? You know, are you in hell? And it went, yes. And somebody said, why? And for the first time, it actually moved to the letters, and it went K, K, K. And so after that, of course, we were done with that.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you.